General Frank Grass, the chief of the National Guard Bureau, says the Guard is a completely different force today than it was on September 11, 2001. It's been changed into an operational reserve rather than a strategic one, and it's trained and equipped nearly identically to the active duty Army and Air Force. Grass says the Guard has been able to attract and keep high-quality service members in part because they've had regular opportunities to serve overseas.
We have to keep this force employed. We have to find challenging missions for them. As I've traveled, and I mentioned 25 states, and go out on drill weekend or annual training, these young men and women join because they think they're going to deploy or they're going to be challenged. If we go back to the strategic reserve that I joined, these young men and women will not stay with us. They will go find something else to do. They want to take the skill sets that they learn in the military and be able to apply them. So as the budgets get tighter, we've got to figure out how to get that right. And we have some ideas we're working on right now.
Grass says he's gotten assurances from the chiefs of the Army and the Air Force that the National Guard will remain an operational force.
Today, there's almost 20,000, I think it's 19,800 Guard men and women mobilized, Air and Army today. So when people say, well, aren't you concerned about them? We're still almost 20,000. Who would have ever thought of that? I think the right number is going to be around 5,000, maybe a brigade every year that will keep us those opportunities. But what's even more important is that we have the opportunity to capitalize on our training periods, on our annual training especially. And some of that may require a three-week annual training to do an overseas mission. The Air Guard has mastered this. Many cases, we've had missions where an exercise needed an Air Guard platform and support, and we were able to pull that out and help the Air Force in a declining budget.
But the National Guard won't just be competing with the active component of the military for overseas deployment opportunities during a time of declining budgets. It'll also be fighting to maintain its share of force structure within the overall Army and Air Force. General Ray Odierno, the Army Chief of Staff, said earlier this week that most of the downsizing his service has planned for to date involves reductions from the active Army, but if sequestration remains in place, the Army National Guard and Reserve will have to shrink too. The Joint Chiefs of Staff are intently examining the proper balance between the active duty force and the reserve components. And while National Guard boosters frequently argue that DOD can preserve military capabilities at lower costs by moving more forces into the Guard and Reserve, Grass says it's possible to take that argument too far. The unintended consequence, he says, would be to end up damaging the reserve components themselves.
If you look throughout history, go over the last, probably since World War II, the Guard's been pretty stable about where we're at as far as the Army and Air Guard in strength. One of the issues we're looking at right now, though, is if we have to take reductions to pay those bills, what does that look like? And those are the numbers we've been working with the Army and with the Air. I think we're in a pretty good place with the Air. We're still working through on discussions with the Army. And we know that we can take some reductions and maintain a quality force in the Guard and pay the Budget Control Act bill. As we move forward, though, everything we do is tied to our two services. The reason we have, you know, our federal mission and our federal equipment is to do that federal mission when called upon. And as the active component loses money, we won't be able to modernize. We won't be able to send pilots to the schools that we need to as rapidly as we need to. We won't be able to get people into basic training and advanced schools. So we got to work very closely with the two services and make sure that, you know, we could win the battle and lose the opportunity to be able to train our folks because the training infrastructure comes from the Army and Air Force.
Fortunately, Grass says, DOD now has some time to hit the books and analyze the right mix between active and reserve forces. Last month's budget agreement bought the military some breathing room to make decisions, delaying the full-blown onset of the Budget Control Act spending limitations from 2014 to 2016 and adding more than $20 billion back into this year's DOD budget.
What we don't want to do is rush into failure. We've got some relief with the $22 billion added and the $9 billion added. That gives us a few years to look at this. And we're tightening belts left and right. You know, we're looking at the changes in units for the future. If we're designing a force for 20 years from now, you know, that force may look a whole lot different than it does today. I mean, if you go back 15 years ago and you look at our force compared to what we fought the war with, totally different in how we're doing business. So, you know, the threat gets a vote. But also, I think there's opportunities to look at how we're headed forward, what types of capabilities do we need in the homeland and the Guard, and we need for our support to the Air Force and Army. And then as we look to the future, how does that money shake out among that? You know, when we get beyond the next 2 years, do we stay on path with the Budget Control Act? What's Congress going to do? Can we get to a point where we can find enough efficiencies and savings to do the missions, to do the strategy, to do the Asia-Pacific shift, and still do that within the budget?
Grass says there are also some promising signs that the National Guard will be able to get more combat power for the dollars it spends over the next few years. He says Guard officials in every state and territory are trying to scale back overhead spending, and the Guard is also hoping its recruiting and training costs will begin to decline once the war in Afghanistan is finished. Over the past decade, those expenses have been unusually high.
On the Army side, we were probably running closer to a 50% prior service and a 50% non-prior service when the war started. That meant, you know, 50% of our force was coming off of active duty into the Guard before the war started. As we went into the war and everyone saw the Guard deployments, 2, 3, 4 deployments, you know, 760,000 Army and Air Guard deployed, a lot of folks that got off of active duty, you know, well, they were starting their careers, their families. They knew if they joined the Guard, they were just going to go on another rotation, you know, and they may have had 2 or 3 deployments already. So what happened was we shifted, and today we're probably sitting at about 20% prior service and 80% non-prior service. That's very costly. Because if we can bring in a trained soldier or airman out of the service into our units, we save her. If we can shift that back closer to 50-50, that will be a big help for the future.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.